This is Digital Story Podcast number 1030, December 16th, 2025. Today's theme is My 5 Favorite Photo Purchases of 2025. I'm Derek Story. I'm lucky enough to be able to test a loaner gear for my podcasts and articles. But sometimes I like something so much that I buy it with my own money and incorporate it into my workflow. Today, I will share my 5 favorite purchases of 2025, plus some industry news as well. All of that and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I thought I would do this list in reverse order, otherwise known as David Letterman Top 10 style, right? Where he starts with number 10 and then works up to number 1. I'm going to start with number 5 and work up to number 1. And it was interesting, I didn't make a lot of purchases in 2025, but I'll tell you what I did bring into my workflow, I'm really enjoying. So it was a good year for me that way. Not too much, not too little, but just the right amount of new gear, and I'm having a lot of fun with it all. Let's start with number five, and it is the Lowepro Trekker Lite BP150 AW Backpack. This backpack, now some of you have seen it because I've had it on all the workshops this year. This backpack is, for me anyway, the definition of just the right size, just the right size for a nimble photographer, not for a heavy duty photographer. If you're carrying around a big old full frame outfit with 5 or 6 lenses, this backpack will not work. But for me, carrying my mirrorless cameras and just a couple small lenses, plus my personal items, plus my MacBook Air, has a separate sleeve for the MacBook Air that I really love. And it accommodates the Air, what is it? The Air is a 13-inch, I believe. It accommodates that computer very well, and it looks like it would accommodate the MacBook Air 15-inch as well. Now, one of the things that I really like about this backpack is that if I'm going on a big trip and I need to bring a bigger bag with more gear in it. So I have my suitcase and then I have a big gear bag with, you know, lots of stuff in it. Let's say I'm going, to Costa Rica for 10 days. This backpack folds flat. So unlike a lot of backpacks that have kind of form-fitting stuff in them, this one uses a camera box, a removable camera box at the bottom of the backpack. You pull that camera box out, and by the way, it has its own strap and suddenly becomes a nice little camera bag for going out to dinner or something like that. But you pull that camera box out and then the backpack itself goes super flat. What I love about super flat is that I can put it in my suitcase with nothing in it, right? Just super flat, have my big old A to B backpack with all my gear in it. Then when I get to my destination, I can pull out the Lowepro, this 150 AW, and just pull out the gear that I need for that specific day, leaving the suitcase back in the room and leaving the big old backpack back in the room too. I like that because sometimes you have to bring, you know, different types of gear for the different types of shoot during a vacation or a workshop, but you don't want to carry that big bag around all the time. So this bag works perfectly for that. Now I use it for my everyday stuff. So it's what I have when I go back and forth from the studio to home and on weekend stuff and all that sort of thing. It has a rain cover. So if the weather's bad, I can protect everything. It has zippered pockets for personal items, has that cool little camera pouch in the bottom that I mentioned that can be an individual camera bag in itself for when you're just, you know, taking a little walk or going out to dinner or something like that. It's really terrific. It looks good. It's super efficient. 18 liters is enough for, especially for us mirrorless shooters, for your camera gear for the day. And then, of course, an extra rain jacket. Has a nice water bottle sleeve on the side. Or you can use that for a tripod if you wish instead. I just haven't really found a lot to fault with it. But again, it's for people who are traveling light. It is definitely a nimble backpack. And it's on sale right now. By the way, as you know, I have links for everything in the show notes. So you don't have to take any notes while you're listening right now. But it's on sale right now for $99 during the holidays at B&H. I got it on one of their super specials, you know, where they do it just for 24 hours. I got it for less than that. I was very lucky. And I saw it and I go, I love it. And the price is right. And I snatched it. But I think it's a good deal at $99 as well. The Low Pro Trekker Lite BP150 AW backpack, 18.5 liters. It's a sweet little ride for nimble photographers. Item number 4, we are moving up the list right now. The Canon PIXMA G620 printer. Now, I bought it for $249 at B&H on one of their specials. It's available right now for $299, which is still a discounted price for the holidays. And I talked about this printer when I bought it. The main attraction was that it used tanks, refillable tanks, instead of, you know, cartridges, which I really wanted to move away from the cartridges for all sorts of reasons. Since I bought this printer, I've had it, you know, now for something like 9 or 10 months. It's been wonderful. I haven't had to refill the tanks since I got it. I print all sorts of stuff. I've used it for my fine art greeting cards. I've used it for prints up to 8.5 by 11. I've used it for documents. It's my document printer as well. When I have to print out a label for the camera shop, I use this printer. The driver is quite good with it. It works very well with my Macs. And it's just been a nice little handy printer. It has a scanner on the top. Its footprint is fairly compact, so it fits, you know, almost anywhere. And it's been a great little guy for me. Now, I still have my bigger printer, the Pro 100, of the Canon Pro 100, for when I need to do 13 by 19s or 11 by 14s. But the bulk of my printing is 8.5 by 11 or smaller. And I have just loved this economical, really nice output Canon PIXMA G620 printer. It makes printing quite affordable. And I love that because, as you know, I love to print. Item number 3, as we continue to go up the list, the Viltrox AF 85mm f1.8 Z lens for Nikon Z. And I got it for $407 at B&H when it first came out. And it's available now for $329. This lens has really impressed me. So when I got the Nikon ZF, I was thinking that this was going to be the camera that I use for my commercial shoots, for weddings, you know, for things like that. And even though I don't do weddings anymore, funny thing, I still did 2 of them in 2025, right? For a guy who doesn't do weddings anymore, that's still 2 weddings. But I wanted to use it also for the occasional portrait shoots that came up. For instance, I had clients that wanted headshots, and I didn't want to use a zoom lens for the headshots. I don't need to, right? I'm in a studio environment, and I wanted a nice little 85. And so I went for this Viltrox, which, you know, then was $400, which is now $329. The AF on it is terrific. The autofocusing is really good on the Nikon. And by the way, Viltrox makes this also in Sony mount. it feels like there's another mount they make it in as well, but I know for sure Sony and Nikon. The lens is beautifully sharp. It's a gorgeous lens. It behaves the way that you want it to. And honestly, if I didn't know this was a $400 lens or now a $330 lens, I would have guessed that it costs a lot more. And I love it when I can get a lens that fills the gap, right? A gap lens. I know I'm not going to be using my 85 f1.8 all the time, but when you need it, it's the right lens and you want to have that lens. You don't want to be forced to repurpose your zoom lens or something like that for a portrait shoot. By being affordable, it allows me to have a lens that I don't use all the time and feel okay about it. So I have been really thrilled with this lens. I've used it on 3 commercial shoots now, and then I've used it for some of my personal stuff. And I have to say, it is top quality, and what a good price. Oh my gosh. Well done, Viltrox. We're all the way up to number 2 now. My number 2 favorite purchase of 2025, the OM System OM3 mirrorless camera body. Now, I bought it right when it came out for $1,999. It's available now with the link I have in the show notes for $1,799 on holiday special at B&H Photo. This camera basically gave me what I really wanted from OM System, which is I have the OM-1 and I think it's terrific. And I shoot with it all the time, especially when I put a longer lens because it has that nice deep grip. But the bulk of my shooting is with shorter lenses, street photography, travel photography, things of that nature. And I really wanted a camera that was perfect for that. Now, I have the Pen F still, and that Pen F still takes terrific pictures, but the OM3 just has all the modern stuff in it, all the latest computational photography stuff in it. It looks really good. I did get a grip for it that I like that also has an Arca Swiss plate on the bottom. And it is the camera that I carry in the LowPro Trekker Lite back and forth from home to the studio. It's the camera that's in the car when I'm out bopping around. It's just the camera that I have with me all the time. And I carry 2 lenses for it in the backpack. And that's all I need. I mean, it is terrific. It shoots really well in low light. Its computational photography tricks are so much fun. On the last workshop, the Sonoma Fall Workshop, you know, we went to Safari West. So I put the 40 to 150 Olympus Tele on there for Safari West with a 1.4x extender. And the shots were fantastic. They just look absolutely beautiful. When we went to the coast, I had shorter lenses on it, except I was in a wild hair mood and I brought the 75mm f1.8 and I did some shooting with that at the coast. And then I was using Live ND and having the water get all kind of nice and flowy against those nice rocks. And I was shooting in black and white and doing that creative stuff with it. So it was a whole different kind of shoot. And the camera adapted really well to that shoot. And then we went to the Air Museum. And I was going, man, I want to do something different with these planes. I want to have some fun. And so then I went to Art Filter bracketing with the camera. And I would take one shot. And it would render, I think I had something like 12 art filters selected. Because you can do art filter, you know, burst mode where it goes, you know, it takes a shot and then it processes 12 different shots for you using 12 different art filters that you've selected. So I did that and just had a blast at the Air Museum and got some really wonderful shots there as well. And again, it was a completely different shoot. And then when we went for our wine education and we had a lovely lunch with pairings, well, then I put a short fast lens on there. I believe I had the 17mm f1.8, and I was using that indoors to sort of capture what was going on with our wine pairing. And those shots turned out terrific. So it's just one of those cameras I feel like that when you're out and about and you don't know exactly what you're going to shoot, and sometimes you get a wild hair and you want to do something fun and creative, it is a wonderful camera for all of those things. I'm having a blast with it. I'm still learning it even after all these months because there's so much in there, and it is definitely one of my favorite purchases of 2025. So you may be wondering, after I spoke so wonderfully about the OM3, what my number one camera purchase was for 2025. It's the iPhone 17 Pro. And I had to wait for this phone. I had to wait because I had smashed my phone, my iPhone 15 Pro Max, with the car, with the ID.4. I had smashed it way back in May for one of our workshops where I left it on top of the car, slid down into a crack. Well, that crack happened to be the crack where the back hatch opens. I closed the back hatch and it crushed my phone, iPhone 15. And I said, I am not buying a new phone until the 17 comes out. I waited all that time. It was an incredibly long wait, but it was worth it. I am having so much fun. So even though I have the OM3 with me in my backpack most of the time, right? Sometimes my backpack is at the studio when I go for a walk, or left in the car when I have a bite to eat for lunch, that kind of thing. The iPhone 17 is in my pocket all the time, all the time. So I always have that one with me. Again, talk about adaptability. I use it a lot for night photography because it does such a good job with night photography. I take it whenever I'm doing any sort of family thing. It's a phone that I use. I like it for street photography because no one hassles me about taking pictures with it out in public. Strangers don't bother me. I'm just taking pictures with my iPhone. Nothing to worry about there. And it has done an admirable job in all areas. They bumped the resolution on it. They made the front-facing camera a higher resolution, and they incorporated even some more computational photography tricks in it. And I just think it's a very well done, very refined camera phone. I've enjoyed it a lot. I had 256 gigabytes in it, and because I use iCloud, that seems to be plenty. I don't foresee me ever running out of storage. It was $1,099, and I bought it from Apple. And I did, by the way, I did get the extended AppleCare warranty. Just in case I do something stupid again, I will be protected this time. So those are my top five, starting with number five, the Lowepro Trekker Lite BP150 All Weather Backpack. Number four, the Canon PIXMA 620 Printer G620. Number three, the Viltrox AF 85mm F1.8 lens for my Nikon Z. Number two, the OM System OM3 mirrorless camera body. And number one, the iPhone 17 Pro, 256 gigabytes. That is some nice gear, and I'm using it all right now and very happy with it. Let's take a look at some camera industry news. I have some good stories for you. Let's start out with the story from Digital Camera World. I have a link in the show notes. Joe Meyerowitz, How I Make Photographs Review. Learn from one of street photography's greatest photographers, a rare, accessible window into the methods and philosophy of a street photography legend. So this is a book that Meyerowitz has written and published, and this looks very interesting. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get this book. Let me read you a bit about it. There are few photographers whose advice I trust as instinctively as Joe Meyerowitz. His work, from the early color-drenched New York streets to the serene Tuscany landscapes, has always been rooted in clarity of scene. How I Make Photographs, the book, continues that legacy. published as part of Lawrence King's Masters of Photography series. It is a compact but remarkably generous guide, distilling decades of working knowledge into concise lessons on how to look, how to move, and how to remain open to the world in front of your lens. Where many how-to books lean heavily on technical instruction, this one teaches photography as a way of being, a vital part of books on street photography. Meyerowitz writes with the warmth of someone who has spent a lifetime paying attention, and his reflections seamlessly integrate practice, philosophy, and lived experience into something much more valuable than a checklist of tips. It reads, in many ways, like a conversation with one of the greats. The book is structured into short, focused chapters, each principle Meyerowitz has carried through his career: composition, color, gesture, pacing, and the emotional charge of a scene are all addressed with the directness of someone who genuinely wants you to improve. His language is clear and unpretentious, and the advice is rooted in real practice rather than abstraction. He is not instructing you to chase perfect moments. He is teaching you how to become more receptive to them. Meyerowitz has always been a photographer of movement, the fluid energy of a street in motion. He articulates how to anticipate rather than react, how to stay loose, how to work around a subject rather than pounce on it. These are techniques that are hard to teach, yet he manages to make them feel legible and learnable. Yeah, so, and there's a lot more here in this review. I'm only reading you just a few paragraphs from it. If you're interested in what I've read so far, I would take a look at this article and then take a look at this book. It's 128 pages and it's priced around $21.99. However, it's often on sale for a little bit lower. Seems like a good investment to me. I'm going to order one for sure. And I'm pretty excited about this. You know, he just won a big award. He's very much in the news right now. He won that big Leica award. And I'm just looking at the excerpts from this book and I'm going, this is something that I want to read. Why Printing Still Matters and How It Separates Authors from Image Makers. This is an article on f-stoppers, and I have a link in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit about it. Most images now appear on screens and vanish a moment later. Printing is no longer required, but it still carries a meaning that the screen cannot hold. Screens exaggerate. They make images appear brighter and higher in contrast, and that illusion quietly shapes how we edit. As with excessive retouching, photography loses its connection to reality and begins to exist in an environment where it can easily be replaced by a generative image. The traps of screen perception. The first is speed. The screen teaches us to look fast. Images move in constant flow, and attention lasts for seconds. Even a strong photograph on a display rarely lives longer than a swipe. The fight for quick attention becomes a fight against naturalness. Printing pulls the image out of this mode. Once removed from its screen context, the image starts to behave differently. It exposes mistakes that were invisible on the display and makes you look again at composition, color, and light. The second trap is physics. Once you move from screen to paper, everything shifts: tone, contrast, depth. What looked clean and rich on the monitor suddenly feels thinner, flatter, less stable. On a material surface, there is no backlight, and every inaccuracy becomes visible. No preset can fix the shift, and no automatic correction can predict how an image will behave under real light. You start accounting for this already when you shoot. Regular printing develops visual memory and turns such decisions from reactive to proactive. The third is lack of scale. A screen allows endless zooming, but for an artistic statement rather than pixel peeping, this becomes a weakness, not a strength. You never really know an image until it exists in space under real light and on a real surface, seen from a real distance. Printing turns that discovery into discipline. It shows you where you control the viewer's attention and where you rely on the display's artificial enhancement. It is not a step back, but a test of control. Printing remains the only format in which the author controls not only the image, but also the duration of contact with the viewer. So he goes on and he covers from perception to responsibility. Shooting is only the beginning. Why scale matters, which he alluded to earlier. Choosing materials, and he gets into all the different types of paper surfaces and paper compositions. Authorship as the result is the final two paragraphs, and I'm going to read you those right now. Authorship begins when the photographer takes responsibility for perception. Printing makes this level of work visible and verifiable. If the image behaves consistently in physical form, if it reads in typical light, at the intended distance, and in the chosen presentation, then the system of decisions is complete. If not, it means the concept or execution needs revision. In both cases, printing gives an honest answer without the self-deception that easily appears on screen. Each iteration increases both the quality of output and the precision of shooting and editing. You gain confidence in how each decision affects the viewer. This is what practical authorship means, taking control of the conditions in which the work exists. In an age where more and more processes are handled by algorithms, this layer remains human. They demand attention, patience, and responsibility for the final form. Printing keeps these skills alive and teaches you how to use them. Perhaps this is how printing helps a photographer become an author. Anyway, interesting article. There's lots of detail in here. If you want to learn more about what the author is talking about here on F-Stoppers, then I encourage you to take a look at the piece. It's good stuff. Michelle Singer Reiner, wife of Rob, was an accomplished photographer. So there was this terrible news yesterday that both Rob Reiner and his wife were found dead in their home. Apparently, stab wounds is what killed them. And it has really sent this community out here in a tailspin. Rob Reiner was absolutely loved. The movies he made, his generous philanthropy, everything. But also, his wife was an accomplished photographer. And this is what I want to read a little bit about for you right now. Michelle Singer Reiner tragically died last night alongside her husband, Rob. While Rob was a famous director and actor, Michelle was a talented photographer whose images were seen by millions. Some of Michelle's best-known work was when husband Rob was directing Misery in 1990, a movie adaptation of Stephen King novel of the same name. Quote, Michelle was a gifted photographer, lead actress Kathy Bates told NBC News today. She shot my beautiful photos for Misery campaign. My heart breaks for them both. My thoughts are with their family. The photos for Misery are truly memorable and perfectly capture the horror of Bates' character. She also shot the front cover for Donald Trump's The Art of the Deal in 1987. The now president's book was estimated to have sold 1.1 million copies in 2016. Michelle met Rob when the latter was directing the romantic comedy When Harry Met Sally. Quote, I look over and I see this girl and whoa, I was attracted immediately, Rob told New York Times in 1989. The pair were on set when they first met. Their meeting caused Rob to change the ending of one of his most famous films. Originally, Harry and Sally didn't get together, he told The Guardian in 2018. But then I met Michelle and I thought, okay, I see how this works. Harry and Sally had to marry each other too. As well as photography, Michelle also served as a producer for some of Rob's projects. She also produced God and Country, a documentary looking at the Christian nationalism in the United States. She also picked up an acting credit in the 1994 Steve Martin comedy Mixed Nuts. So we lost not one, but two very impactful artists. It's just a shame. Michelle Singer Reiner was an artist in our field as well, and I wanted to acknowledge what she has done and what she has accomplished over the years. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with the workshops that we have coming up. We're in December right now, but I'm telling you, before we know it, we are going to be in the heat of workshop season. And so I wanted to remind you about the online workshops we have coming up, just in case you haven't registered for one yet and you're thinking that you might want to. In January, we have two events. On January 10th, we have the webinar, How to Make the Most of Your Workshop Experience. And this webinar is going to be on a Saturday, January 10th. It's only $10. If you're an Inner Circle Bold member, it's free. All you have to do is send me a note and say you want me to register you. And I think it's just going to be a great discussion with Rob and I and, you know, the folks that are attending about how to get the most out of a workshop, whether it's one of ours or you're attending someone else's. So we start out with that on January 10th. And then a little bit later in the month, we have Real World Adobe Lightroom. And this is going to start, actually, it starts on January 8th. And so it's on the 8th, the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th. And this is going to be an excellent course for those of you that use Lightroom Classic and you want to get more out of your application. Rob is a terrific teacher and he knows this application inside and out. So that is an online workshop. It's $165 for the whole month. Inner Circle members get a 10% discount on it. And then a little later in the month, on January 28th, we start another online workshop, Mobile Photography with the iPhone, the iPad, and Camera. And I'm leading this workshop, and this is where we integrate all these devices, basically our favorite devices, right? Our smartphone, our mirrorless camera, and then an iPad, or even your light computer, your light laptop, into a workflow that is both fun and easy to use. These tools are so terrific. And when you put them together, when you hook them together, they become even better than individually. So if you're a fan of shooting with your iPhone, if you have an iPad that you like to use, and you have a mirrorless camera that you absolutely love, this workshop will help you bring it all together. It's a terrific workshop. I even have an ebook. I wrote an ebook to go with it. So every member of the workshop gets the ebook in addition to the workshop itself. That begins on January 28th. It's also $165, but for Inner Circle members, they get a 10% discount. So these are right around the corner. If you haven't signed up for any of them yet and you're thinking that you want to start out your year with some great photography instruction and with hanging out with other people in our community, get over there, get signed up now, get your name in there, and then you'll be ready to go when January comes around. And since we mentioned Inner Circle members, I want to give them a big shout out. Thank you for supporting this community throughout the year, and I look so forward to working with you in 2026. If you'd like to become an Inner Circle member, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. That article on printing really summed up a lot of things that I think are true about how you can improve as a photographer, how you can create actual art, and how you can see your photography in a different light by printing it out and living with it as opposed to just fleeting images on a screen. Red River Paper is also dedicated to that cause. They have an entire website built for supporting that with knowledge, of course, with paper, with tutorials, and with product reviews. So if you're thinking, let's say you read that article and you go, you know what? I think I do want to embrace inkjet printing and give it a go. The next stop for me would be clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story for Red River Paper. Nose around a bit, get some of their paper recommendations for the type of shooting that you're doing and get going. Make 2026 the year that you produce some beautiful fine art prints. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.